We're in the home stretch. Mark 10, we're going to pick up in verse 32 today. I've got a lot to do before Jim takes off next week, so bear with me. In chapter 10, we just looked at last week, Jesus in dealing with this rich young man, rich young ruler, if you will, who came to him and asked him what it is that he needed to do to inherit eternal life. Jesus, of course, gives him what he needs to hear, ultimately, and telling him, go sell your possessions and give it away to the poor and come follow me. The issue really wasn't about keeping commandments, but it was about his heart. And that's the whole thing that Jesus has been trying to explain to his disciples through a lot of what we've seen is it's a matter of heart. It's not just about doing commands. So many people in the world today want to just say, what's the bare minimum I have to do in order to get to heaven? And they're not looking at it as really following a Lord with love, that has love and compassion for you, and wanting to do your best to serve him. Of course, the rich young ruler walks away. Eric. Exactly. But isn't that the way the world is geared, Eric? The world just wants to know, what's the bare minimum I have to do to get by? We're called to be much better than that. From there, Peter asks Jesus, he says, well, we've given up everything to follow you. Surely there's more in it for us, or something of that nature. You can see the idea. I love Peter. I really do. I really see a lot of Peter in me sometimes. But I've grown past that, and so has Peter. But Jesus, again, is wanting Peter to understand that, you know, it's about servanthood. And he makes this statement. I want to pick up in verse 31. He says, but many who are first will be last. And the idea that he wants his disciples to understand is you need to be a servant. You need to be willing to put others above you, their needs above your needs. The world's not good at that. We struggle with that. I struggle with that. I'll be honest with you. I think we all, if we're honest in our hearts, we struggle with that from time to time. So that's where we've left it. And then we get into verse 32. So from there, Mark just picks up and he says, verse 32, now they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was going before them, and they were amazed. And as they followed, they were afraid. Then he took the 12 aside again and began to tell them the things that would happen to him. Now, I want you to understand, there's a lot of things that Mark says that you can start making suppositions about. He tells us that they're going down the road and they're afraid. He doesn't tell us anything about why they're afraid. He doesn't tell us why they're amazed. He just makes a statement. They're going down the road, and they're afraid, and they're amazed. Now, if you go back and you look at the other accounts of Matthew and Luke, and you can even kind of see it here, Jesus has been telling these disciples, I'm going to be taken to Jerusalem, and I'm going to die. I'm going to be persecuted. I'm going to be spit on. He's told them many times he's going to die, and he's going to raise again. And I am quite certain that as they're hearing this, well, the scripture bears it out. They really don't have a clue or really understand, because it's still being veiled from them, what it is that he's trying to impart to them to really get it. Because this is not their idea of the ruler and the king that they're following. But Mark doesn't go into a whole lot of that. He just says they're amazed, they're afraid, they're headed to Jerusalem. And he's going to take them aside, and he tells them the things that are going to happen. And they're not going to like what they hear. Verse 33, behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed into the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles. Let's just stop right there. So here you are, you've been following this man for 3 years, and he's been telling you all along, I'm going to be killed. I'm going to die. I'm going to raise again. Matter of fact, Peter and James and John, whenever they were up on the mountain and he was transfigured and they're coming down the mountain, and you remember what he told them? Don't say anything about this till I've raised. Well, what does that mean? You know, there's confusion in their minds and in their hearts. But he's laying it out here very plainly for them now. This is where we're headed. This is where I'm headed. This is what is going to take place. Does Jesus have any question about what's going to take place in the future? No. He spells it out for them plainly. And in verse 34, they go on and he says they will mock him and scourge him and spit on him and kill him. And the third day he will raise again. Is there any doubt in what Jesus is telling them that they can't understand what he's telling them now? I mean, he's been alluding to his death. He's been alluding to his raising. He's been telling them about it, but not in such plain terms as, here's what's going to happen when we get to Jerusalem. He's preparing them for what's about to take place. And they're about to go through something that's going to be life-changing for them. It will. So, I want you to stop and think about in 1 Peter chapter 2, every time I read these things, I think about Jesus knowing full well what he's going to go through. And yet, to have the tenacity to follow it through. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 33, it says, he entrusted himself to God who judges righteously. Jesus is going to continue to go down this path that he knows that he's going to face. And he's going to be a servant of all to the very last breath that he takes on that cross. That's where his mind is set. And nothing is going to change that. That's why he wants these men to understand, here's where we're headed. This is what's going to take place. But for him to go through that and live out every single detail of what he has been telling them about being a servant, he will live that out till his last dying breath. And you can't help but see that as he goes to the cross. That being said, Jesus had to be perfect. He had to be perfect to be our sacrifice for sin. Just one flaw, just one sin, where would you be today? Lost. Jesus understands the magnitude of what he's about to go through and what it means. But ultimately, he is showing his disciples, here's what a true servant looks like. And you'll begin to see that as we start going through and studying the Jesus as he goes into Jerusalem and what he's going to go through. I'm always reminded in the book of Revelation, John records as they're looking at the scrolls and they're trying to figure out who's going to be worthy to open the book, take the book, and they sang a new song. Revelation 5 verse 9 says, they sang a new song, you're worthy to take the scroll, to open its seals. For you were slain and you've been redeemed by God, to us by God, by your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation. That's who he is. He's worthy. So Jesus has been a servant from the very beginning. He's going to serve in his death. And now think about this. He's serving even in heaven, seated at the right hand of God. He's our high priest. He's the one that stands and mediates between us and God. We have nothing without Jesus. We are hopelessly lost without Jesus. But he wants them to understand, I'm going to Jerusalem, and I'm going to go through every one of these things, and you're going to see it all. Be ready for it. Then I get tickled, verse 35, James and John. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, verse 35, came to him saying, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Man, if that isn't a loaded question. I'm reminded of the day that Michelle comes to me and said, Now before you say no, I want to get a dog for the house. Okay, no, it's evidently not an option. So what am I thinking about? But here is James and John, and they go, we're going to ask you to do something, and we want you not to tell us no. You know, we already know the answer we want to hear, and we just want to know that it's okay. Doesn't that sound a lot like we are sometimes? Think about in your prayers sometimes whenever you're asking God for something or you're praying about something. Why is it I'm asking for it? What is it that I'm really looking for? Am I looking for His approval or am I looking for His will? What we can take from this, and I want to bring this out as we go through this, so I want you to look and see how Jesus responds, and there's a lesson in it for us. What do you want? He asked them, what do you want me to do for you? Do you think Jesus doesn't already know what's in their hearts and in their minds, what they're going to ask? Of course He does. But let's let them verbalize it. The patience and the humbleness and the love that Jesus shows to His disciples and those people that are around Him all of the time. Would it have been just as easy for Jesus to say, I know what you're going to ask, I know what you're thinking, you guys just absolutely wear me thin. That'd be the human response, right? What is it you want me to do for you? Well, they said to him, verse 37, grant us that we may sit, one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory. But that way they understand the glory part. And, you know, there's going to be people in glory with you. And if you're sitting here, we want to be right next to you. We want to be right there in glory with you. Is nice to be important to people? Isn't that the way the world is? I want to be sitting right there where people look at me and think very highly of me. And yet you still see the patience of Jesus when He says, what do you want me to do for you? And then the way He responds. Verse 38, but Jesus said to them, you do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink and be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with? He's just told them about what He's going to go through. He's just laid it all out there. I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm going to be mocked and I'm going to be scourged and I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be killed. Are you able to go through that with me? Now, in your heart of hearts, even if you didn't ask Jesus to be seated on the right or the left hand and to be in glory with Him, if Jesus asked you, would you be willing to go through what I'm going to go through? Would you want to? But would you follow me into that? Will you go with me and go through everything that I'm going through? Would you be able to do that? In your heart of hearts, or in my heart of hearts, I'll tell you, I'd like to say yes. But would I? You don't know till you've been tested. Well, they're going to be tested. I was going to say, they're going to be tested. But in my heart of hearts, I like to say, Jesus, remember Peter? He's going to tell them, Lord, thou hast come through me first. I've got the sword. I'm here. But they all ran, didn't they? But that's in future lessons. I don't want to take away from that. They say, well, let's go on. They said to him, we are able. They say, yes, I can do it. They have no idea what they've just told Jesus they're willing to do. Even though he has explained everything to them that here's what's going to happen. Yeah, we're able. We're right there with you, Lord. So Jesus said to them, you will indeed drink the cup that I drink, and with the baptism I am baptized with, you will be baptized. Does Jesus know what's going to happen to them? Not just in Jerusalem, but down the road? Absolutely. Does Jesus know everything about what's about to take place for everybody? Absolutely. And he tells them, he says, you're going to be baptized. He says, you're going to go through it. And I want you to stop and think about when Jesus is raised and you see 12 apostles with insight and determination, were they willing to go to the cross and die for him? Sure they were. They were not afraid to go out into the streets and preach Jesus. If it took being beaten, scourgings, whatever. Jesus says, you're going to be baptized. You're going to face it. But look at how he responds. Verse 40. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but is for those for whom it is prepared. Does Jesus have the authority to say, yep, you're going to be right here in glory with me? Yeah. He's the Son of God. Anything that he would say could be bound. But who does he defer to? God. It's not really my choice to make. It is for God in heaven who has reserved for those who will follow me to make that choice. I'm not the one who you need to be talking to. How many times in our lives do we sit and somebody will ask us a question or put us in such a way that they want us to give them an answer about what to do? How do we respond? Well, first off, Jesus gives us the humility. Let them talk. Let them tell them exactly what it is you want. Well, I want to be in heaven. Okay. Let's talk about heaven. And then let's go, let's see what God says about how you get there. What's the bare minimum for me to get to heaven? Well, let's just look at what God says about how you get to heaven. What's really important? Let God do the talking. Let God be the judge. You're not. I'm not. He says, so I'm going to defer to God because I'm here to serve him and glorify him. Everything that he does, everything that Jesus does, always points back to God. That should be our life. Excuse me. Lost my place. Haven't even been looking at my notes, have I? Let's move on. I'm going to do it on time. I think I'll make it. Verse 41. And when the ten heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. Well, you have just walked for years following Jesus with these two disciples. And here you are, you're hearing them going, well, you know, we want to sit right here next to you. We want to be in glory with you. We want to be special. Really? Did you forget what Jesus was just teaching you about being a servant and about being humble? Have they missed all that? About how to treat your brothers and be respectful of each other? Yeah, they've seen this the whole time, and Jesus has been living it. And you've got two who evidently are getting it, but now you see the others are displeased with them. Why? Well, if they can be there, why can't I be there? Who do they think they are getting special treatment? You bring that up, the mother, yes. The mother actually went and asked. Well, when I read that, I always think, here's James and John, and they probably talked to Mom. That's it. You ever hide behind Mom? We really don't want to ask, but we want to ask, so we'll just kind of get her to kind of go up there too. I don't know. But it's very plain that the disciples, the other ten, are very upset and displeased because, well, what about us? Where does that leave us? Again, have we forgot about being humble? I mean, none of them are really getting it. Exactly. Jesus has just been telling them what servanthood looks like, and then he comes back and he says, and if you're going to be in the kingdom, you're going to have to be like a child. Have they missed all that? So Jesus calls them together and he's going to break it down for them. Verse 42. But Jesus called them to himself and said to them, you know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. He says, so you want to be like the world. You know how the Gentiles are. They've got those who are... they're the rulers. They're considered rulers over the Gentiles. And the ones who are given authority, they sit there and they exercise that authority to where you're going to show me respect and you're going to follow me and my directions and my orders no matter what. No questions asked. If I jump, you just ask how high. He says, you know what the world is like. Verse 43. Yet it shall not be so. And this is not really a suggestion. Yet it shall not. That word shall, it means this is not how it's going to be with you. It shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. If you want to be great in the kingdom of heaven, in the kingdom of God, you want to be great, you will be a servant. Jesus makes it very clear, it's not an option. You want to be considered great in the kingdom of heaven, then you have to be willing to serve and put your life as being humble and being willing to put others and their needs above you and your desires. Jesus just breaks it down very plain to them. They didn't get it. The last first and the first last, no, they did not get that. And again, as I was preparing these lessons, I had another thought, and I keep going back to this, but Jesus, again, shows servanthood and humility, and is willing to do that to the very end. You're going to see it whenever he goes to the upper room and he washes the disciples' feet. He says, you're not getting this yet, but when I'm doing, you will. in his teachings and in the way that he dealt with people. In the day-to-day walks and things that he did, and people were coming to him, he was willing to put his needs and his desires behind and take care of the needs of others. He's always willing to do whatever it takes to help other people come to see and know God. It really wasn't about Jesus. Everything he did still pointed to God. And that's what he wants his disciples to see and understand. Judas for sure didn't get it. Judas is the one that betrayed him, correct? Judas is the one that put his hands in the money bag, pilfered from it. He would choose self. And you can look at others and see that. Jesus simply chose to entrust himself to God and let God take care of everything that needed to be taken care of, so he could be a servant. Verse 45. This is the capstone. To me, this is the capstone of Mark right here. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. That is such a powerful statement. I don't know if there's a couple of verses in Scripture that just rock me. But this is one of them. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served. If there was anybody that ever came to this earth and walked on this earth and did anything on this earth that deserved glory and honor, would it not be Jesus? And yet, here he is born in a barn, in a stable. He lives a life of poverty, not a life of a king. Doesn't even have a home or a place to call home. Relies on God to take care of his every need, and yet in doing all of the things that he does, he's always pointing to God and God will provide. We need food for 5,000 people, God will provide. We need food for 4,000, God will provide. We need this, we need that. God will just take care of it. I just need to be a servant and be willing to do it and let God take care of whatever is needed to do it. As he's walking on the water and they see him walking on the water, they think it's a ghost. He wants to pass by. They're scared to death, so he stops. Just time after time after time. He's willing to serve. And then it says, and to give his life as a ransom. He's the only one that can give his life as a ransom. He is the only one through whom we have any hope at all. And that's why he came. To give his life. So that we can have life. Because without him, we're lost. That's a true servant that says, these people need help, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So the lesson that I want us to draw from that is, you see the willingness that he has to humble himself even to the point of death. And he's not asking us necessarily to do that, but will I? Yeah.
Yeah. So His glory wasn't something that he asked the Father for. His glory was given to him by the Father because he poured himself out to death.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, his glory was given to him, not because he asked for it. If we could just get servanthood down, just a minuscule of what he really was willing to sacrifice. But the world's just not like that, isn't that? And that's where we struggle. People always want to go, you know, why do I struggle? Well, it's because I'm not willing to just humble myself and be willing to pour myself out and let God be in control. That's where we fail. That's where I fail. Mark. Yeah. Yeah. And you're right, he did. He washed the feet of Judas, knowing full well what's about to take place. How would we respond to something? And even if they did treat us badly, would I be willing to forgive them? Because you're going to see forgiveness as he's on the cross. Okay. Thoughts, comments before we move on. Okay, verse 46. An interesting set of events takes place here. I've always pondered this a lot. Verse 46, they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples, and a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. Now, just so we're not confused, Bar is his name, means son of, and Timaeus means the father, that's the lineage, so it's the son of Timaeus. But here he is, and he's sitting by the road begging. So, does he have a whole lot if he's a beggar? Doesn't have much. Sitting by the road, looking for somebody to help him a little bit. Excuse me. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Evidently being blind, he still knows who Jesus of Nazareth is and understands full well the power that Jesus has, and this guy can help me. There's faith there, because he's crying out. He just hears Jesus is walking out. He's blind. He can't see, but he knows, I just need mercy. Anybody see something strange there? When you say, Jesus, have mercy on me. What is mercy? Pardon? Well, it's forgiveness, but it's more than that. It's much deeper than that. And so many times people, they mix up grace. We talk about love, grace, mercy. Let me break it down for you in Mike's terminology. Because of love, God gives us grace. Grace is getting something we need. And because of God's grace, we get mercy. Mercy is giving you something you don't deserve. And here is Bartimaeus saying, Jesus, Lord, have mercy on me. Give me something. I don't deserve this. Now, I want you to stop and think. Mercy is something that God gives to us. But why would Bartimaeus be asking for mercy, something he doesn't deserve? He's blind. Is he blind because of something he did? I don't think so. But a lot of times whenever we're asking for mercy, we're asking for something that I really don't deserve it, but I need relief or I need help. I need something that I can't do for myself, but you have the ability to give me something that I really don't deserve, but it would sure be nice. It would sure make my life better. You think about whenever people go into a court of law and they're found guilty, the first thing they ask for is mercy. You don't deserve it, but would you have mercy on me? So, Lord, have mercy on me. Now, here's the funny part about this. Verse 48, then many warned him, be quiet. He cried out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And I can just picture this as the people are coming through, and he's crying out, and here's the apostles and the disciples, and all these people are walking around, shh, 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 don't bother him. He's busy. He's got more important people to deal with and more important things to do than deal with a beggar. Have they missed servanthood again? Have they missed what Jesus has been doing for 30 years in his life, but moreover in three that they've been following him? They just still are not getting it. Be quiet. Leave him alone. But it's interesting how their attitude changes in verse 49. Eric. Well, I don't know that he understands that, but, you know, through Scripture, it's very plain, the lineage of Jesus, where he's coming from. That's why I say, this blind man sees more than the people who are following him who can see. And I find that amazing, being a blind man, how he can have that much knowledge and understanding and yet still be blind whenever people who are perfectly well able to hear and see, and they are not getting it, Matt. No. Yeah, exactly. It's a heart of faith that leads him to it, to the conclusion that Jesus can help me. Verse 49. So Jesus stood still. Jesus just stops and commanded him to be called. So here they are, and Jesus just stops and he says, bring him to me. And then they called the blind man and said to him, be of good cheer. Rise, he's calling you. All of a sudden it goes from, shh, oh man, he's calling for you. Quick, quick, get up, come on, he's wanting you. He wants to talk to you. You see the world and how wishy-washy the world is. I'm always reminded in James whenever he talks about being tossed to and fro. The people of faith who don't have faith, that their faith is just like a ship that's being tossed to and fro. You see it here. Verse 50, throwing aside his garment, he rose and he came to Jesus. This puzzles me and it always has puzzled me. He throws his garment aside. That's probably the only thing this guy has. You ever stop and think about that? Mark puts it in there, and he says, he just throws his garment aside. And I have speculations for why, and I can't preach it, and I won't teach it. But it's very evident that this garment is not going to get in my way. We're going to Jesus. Because I've got faith he can help. Get rid of this thing. I don't need it. Jesus is going to make me well. So Jesus answered and said to him, and here again is the integrity and the humility of Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? You think Jesus doesn't already know? He's blind. He's a beggar. He's sitting right here alongside the road. Have mercy on me. Well, what is it that you really want? Let him verbalize it. The blind man said to him, Rabboni, that I might receive my sight. Now that word Rabboni, some versions I think use the word Lord or Master, and it's a very respectful term, and it is used in the Greek to kind of refer to the spiritual instructors or teachers of the day. So does he understand who Jesus really is? You're a very special teacher. People listen to you. You know what you're talking about. This man, again, is blind, and he sees more clearly and has more faith than the people who are following that have sight and can see and hear. So he throws the sign, and he says, I just want to receive my sight. Verse 52, then Jesus said to him, go your way. Here's the capstone right here. Your faith has made you well. Your faith. How does Jesus respond to people of faith? If we're people of faith, do you think Jesus would respond to us? It's interesting to me, though. Jesus says, because of your faith, you're made well. Now, there's been a lot of people that have been made well, and they had faith. But I want you to see the real faith that this guy has. I don't know how many years I've read this till here. It's been a while back, but I read this, and it's like this next part, this verse. It's just like, the light bulb goes off, the bell's dinging. And it says, and immediately he received his sight and, what's the word? Followed Jesus. He's got everything I need. I don't need anything else. He's given me a blessing of sight. I don't need anything else except Jesus. What do we need? We need Jesus. If nothing else in this world, we need Jesus. This blind man gets it. He understands perfectly well. He's given me sight. But moreover, he'll take care of anything that I need. I just need to follow him. Jesus comes to be a servant. Jesus comes and serves and gives us the example of servanthood and tells us what it's all about. And here's a blind man who says, I'm going to be a servant and follow you. Are we willing to do that too? That's really what we need to learn from this. Thoughts, comments. I thought the bell would have done. There it is. Okay. Thank you for your time.